You've heard us talk about it, and now it's finally here. Check out our new book, Death by Umbrella, The 100 Weirdest Horror Movie Weapons, featuring a foreword by none other than Uncle Lloyd Kaufman of Troma Entertainment. The book's available at Amazon.com, Amazon UK, Amazon Canada, as well as Bear Manor Media and Barnes & Noble.
Top of the news this evening is speculation concerning the real facts behind the Department of Health announcement about a radioactive spill supposed to have occurred yesterday at the state nuclear plant.
I know what you're thinking. Mine's bigger than yours, right? It's not fair. Throw it away. All right?
They're coming! The rats are coming! Thousands of them!
Tell me about Disneyland.
They got tons of popcorn there.
Yeah.
And all you gotta do is go climb a tree to go eat it.
It was a night like any other night. Then something happened.
Oh, good Lord! It's unbelievable. It's horrible.
Hey, wait! There's something weird here.
Welcome to the Really Awful Movies Podcast, a celebration of low-budget cinema.
The sleep of reason gives birth to monsters.
Hi, my name's Chris, and along with Jeff, we're bringing you the very best and worst of horror, sci-fi, post-apocalyptic wasteland, kung fu, and women in prison movies from the 1960s to today. Check us out at reallyawfulmovies.com, part of the Crypt TV family.
By the way, who are you waiting for anyway?
I'm waiting for Dolomite.
For who?
Dolomite, motherfucker, you heard her.
Some folks say that Willie Green was the baddest motherfucker the world ever seen. But I want you to hold on to your seat. Hold on to them tight. Because now get ready to see the story of me. Yeah, me, the badass Dolomite.
From downtown Toronto headquarters, here's episode 101. You no good rat soup eating honky motherfucker, Dolomite, Rudy Ray Moore, 1975, blaxploitation. Is it a comedy? Is it an action? I don't know what it is.
It's hardly one or the other.
No,
I mean
it's an attempt at both.
Yeah, exactly. To call it a comedy would be very charitable because there were a few laughs to be had, and to call it an action movie would be rather charitable as well because I mean those are some very feeble-looking karate kicks. But you know what? It's Dolomite. There's something very unique about it. Rudy Ray Moore is a very unique character in the history of black cinema, black culture, black... Hey, man, the guy feels like he's the godfather of rap, the progenitor of rap. He feels like that, you know, he's... The rap genre started with one Rudy Ray Moore. So, before we talk about Dolomite, let's talk about Rudy Ray Moore.
You said he looked like Frank Costanza.
He kind of... Well, no, I mean, he reminded me of a...
Okay, sartorial sense,
As I'm watching the movie, because I gotta say, I saw this movie probably for the first and only time... maybe 15, 16 years ago, I rented it, and I love the low-budget aspect of it all. I just love the ridiculousness of it, and, you know, it was Dolomite. I heard so much about it, I watched it, I kind of thought it was unique, and I haven't revisited it since. And then we decided to podcast it, I watched it yesterday, and, you know, really excited. I was like, oh, I'm going to revisit Dolomite, I really enjoyed it the first time. And I don't know what it was, but I'm getting this Frank Costanza vibe off of Rudy Ray Moore. I mean, this is a... You know, he wasn't a young man when he made this movie.
No.
And, you know, he's wearing his pants hiked up to his nipples, and he's kind of got this weird sort of, like, cadence's voice where he talks low and then he yells. And then I get this weird sort of Frank Costanza, Jerry Stiller, you know, although he's, of course, African-American, Frank Costanza is not, but yeah.
I got a sort of avuncular B.B. King kind of vibe to him. He wore this sort of big, thick denim, so he had a very B.B. King 1970s
When We Were Kings kind of vibe to him, also with the poor boy fisherman's cap on and everything, but just an amazing character. And this whole thing, I guess you could call him an auteur of sorts, he put this entire thing together, didn't direct it, but for $100,000 he used this as a sounding board, used this as a marketing vehicle for his, I guess you'd call it comedy, and his odd sermons that he would sort of deliver, that he veers from the plot of this movie to deliver these.
Yeah, well, I mean, they, you know, when his comedy was not your standard get up there and tell jokes. I mean, he would get up there and tell stories. And there's a couple of them in this movie, including Signifying Monkey, which is, I guess, the most famous. But in doing so, he kind of adopted the cadence of rap. And this was in 1975. So, I mean, this is before...
I guess a year before Grandmaster Flash.
Yeah, and the Sugar Hill Gang and so on and so forth. It's not altogether... unjustified for him to say that he was a progenitor of rap. And many rap artists have acknowledged the influence of Rudy Ray Moore. One being was Snoop Dogg, I believe, paid homage to him in one of his videos. Eddie Murphy was a big Rudy Ray Moore fan. And he was just this filthy guy. He just got up there and just said these really bizarre kind of limerick-esque stories that sort of went nowhere. But they had the audience in stitches. And, so he created this vehicle where he created this alter ego, I would say, Dolomite, who's sort of like this pimp, club owner...
Impresario,
And as the movie begins, he's imprisoned.
For, I guess, reasons of exposition. He's just sitting in there, and I guess he's been busted, because they do a little flashback. He's been busted for $500,000
of clothes. Some of the clunkiest flashbacks ever. He was sent up the river because they found furs and drugs in the backseat of his car. And when the warden is talking to him and mentions that, and right away they cut to that scene, but it's done so artlessly that I'm just like, is this following
is
the
this,
next
narrative?
And that happened two or three times in the movie where they flash back, but there's no real segue to it being a flashback. It just seems like it's part of the narrative in a linear structure, so very artless. But when the movie begins, he's sitting in this jail cell, and... one of the screws, I guess, comes up to me and goes, the warden wants to see you. And the first thing he says is, shit.
And
that's probably the one time I laughed to the second revisit, whatever.
There's a few laughs to be had. And I guess this sort of reminded me of the typical dumb action movie. Because there's always the guy who's in prison, although in this case it was maybe justified. He's involved in some sort of criminal activity, maybe. Or he was set up. We're not entirely sure of his checkered past, let's say. Mm-hmm. But he's in jail, and it reminded me of... like a Steven Seagal or Stone Cold Steve Austin kind of thing, where they make a deal with him, and they try and broker a deal where he's a badass, but he's in prison, and yet in order to process his release, and he has to do something for the law in exchange for his freedom.
And
so this is the same
thinking,
dumb action boilerplate.
And I was thinking Death Wish 3, which we podcasted not that long ago, where the same sort of thing, and where the under the auspices of the police chief, they released Paul Kersey to clean up the streets. And in this case, the neighborhood has gone to shit in the 2 years that Dolomite's been in prison. His nephew's been shot.
Little Jimmy. And that's who he wants to, avenge and get to the bottom of what happened to this guy. Mm-hmm. And all signs are pointing to this nightclub-owning figure named Willie Green, who is played by, I think, the director, whose name escapes me, D'Urville Martin.
Okay.
And so, also on the streets, there's a reverend who's involved in gun running and who's got a mistress who's a fantastic character named Queen Bee, who's this sort of voluptuous, sort of Aretha Franklin type, and she's got the fur, she's all blinged out. And so, I guess, Dolomite agrees to this this little arrangement where he can go out and, I guess, clean up the streets for the warden, sort of.
Yeah.
I mean, it really doesn't, they don't really explicitly give him instructions as to what he's to do.
And Queen Bee is the one who's sitting there as he's speaking with the warden, and...
she's one of the few people who's been tipped off about his mission, along with one unnamed FBI agent.
Right, he says there's only four people who know, me... Queen Bee, yourself, and one other person, which we can't tell you. But what I really, it was funny because he goes, you know, Dolomite, you're tough. You know how to roll with the punches. And I'm looking at this.
he knows how to maybe.
BB King, as he said. I'm like, this guy is not
he
tough.
He knows maybe jelly rolls. I don't know about rolling with any punches.
And when when they flashed back to when he was framed, first of all, he was dressed like a giant checkerboard, really, which is kind of hilarious. And he's like, shit, man, that's not mine. And then he delivers a few feeble karate kicks to the FBI agents that were arresting him. And it was just so.
Yeah,
ludicrous.
Well, he can barely lift his leg above knee level. Exactly. So these spinning heel kicks. Yeah,
and one of the FBI agents goes flying to the trunk of a car. It's just really, really, really funny.
I guess we should say there are still some. Again, only a few people know about this clandestine plan, and still the cops are after him upon his release, and they're keeping tabs on him.
Right.
Some of the FBI guys and watching his every move.
Well, there's this dirty cop by the name of Mitch, and he's. Basically the fly in the Dolomite ointment. In fact, when Dolomite is released and Queen Bee picks him up with a harem of other...
The bitches in tow.
And Dolomite is not happy with the garb that they gave him to wear upon his release, and right away he...
he changes right outside the prison gates into this fly suit. That's
exactly.
So cool.
And right then and there, I'm looking at this guy, and I'm like, man, he's got the body, he's got the physique of, like, SD Special Delivery Jones. Not 1 ounce of muscle tone.
Maybe Uncle Phil from The Fresh Prince.
Maybe not that rotund, but I mean, he's certainly not exactly a specimen of man.
No.
And, yeah, he gets out, and there's a little hanky panky in the back seat, you know. He's got some black hose, he's got some white hose.
Oh, yeah.
And right away he wants to get back to operating his club.
Yeah, so since taken over, I guess, since he's been in the joint by, again, this Willie Green.
This Willie Green
who's
fella,
just
yeah.
taken over the thing, and so he's got this there's this power struggle over the club. And also some interesting fringe characters in this thing. One, I guess, colloquially known as Hamburger Pimp. A.K.A. Creeper,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Who's a local. I think someone on IMDb pointed out he was maybe the one legit actor in the whole thing. He seemed somewhat compelling as the heroin addict who's all just strung out and just trying to get... He's an inside source as to the goings-on in the street since Dolomite's been locked up.
Yeah, that was a funny scene when the Hamburger Pimp was trying to get a hamburger and obviously strung out and he had no money and he goes, come on, just spot me for the hamburger. Hustler's good. And then as he's walking off, he meets Dolomite and he uttered this line, which I actually had to write down because that was pretty fucking hilarious. And this is the creeper who's basically, you know, in this heroin fog and goes, I'm so bad. I kick my own ass twice.
It's up there with "I'm so bad I make medicine sick." Muhammad Ali's like famous line. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's just great. And there's this thing is filled with some wonderful lines. As again, Dolomite is trying to wrest control of this club back from this Willie Green fellow and enlisting the help of various sort of underworld figures while he's trying to dodge these corrupt FBI agents. There's so much going on, and yet so little.
Yeah, exactly.
Because this thing, 90-minute runtime, it could have easily been, let's say, 65. Because there's elaborate dance numbers. There's, as we mentioned before, this sort of sermon, rap, speak, comedy routine about a monkey and a lion. Some sort of strange parable. It must have gone on for 12 minutes.
Oh, this is the signifying moment.
Yeah.
Way down in the jungle deep, the lion stepped on the signifying monkey's feet. The monkey said, motherfucker, can't you see? You're standing on my goddamn feet. The monkey lived in the jungle in an old oak tree. Bullshitting the lion every day in the week. Every day before the sun go down, that lion will kick his ass all through the jungle town. But the monkey got wise and started using his wit. Started saying, I'm gonna put a stop to this old ass-kicking shit. So he ran up on the lion the very next day. He said, oh, Mr. Lion, there's a big bad motherfucker coming your way. And he's somebody that you don't know. He just broke a loose from Ringling Brothers Show.
Hey, you're not even talking about some of his bitches, like Shy.
Oh, Shy for Chicago, yeah. And well, there's a Chicago reference too, because there's a corrupt mayor, Daley, who mm-hmm. infamously ran Chicago into the ground for years. So this was obviously a dig at him. And Shy, short for Chicago, another one of his hot fly chicks.
Yeah. And interestingly enough, while he was up in the joint, Queen Bee was putting the bitches through karate school.
Yes.
So as to somehow be ready for whatever.
Yeah, for the imminent release of Dolomite and his army.
And you mentioned, of course, that the cops were not complicit in this...
in the deal with the warden, yeah.
And so, yeah, there's this corrupt cop who, Mitch, and he's trying to shake down Dolomite. Yeah, he says to Dolomite... You got those black bitches working for you, and Dolomite goes, hey, don't forget the white ones, too.
Yeah.
I mean, there is some funny lines in this movie, I gotta say.
Yeah, and corrupt political figures. Again, the aforementioned Mayor Daley, who's this balding, squat, just a corrupt municipal official who's got dealings with Willie Green,
mm-hmm.
and he's also banging one of, I think, maybe one of Dolomite's bitches. I couldn't keep track of this. He's involved somehow in it, and he's trying to be kingmaker, trying to put over Willie Green, so he orders a hit out on Dolomite at the end, because mm-hmm. he's really in cahoots with Willie Green. And it's a contract hit with these three mafiosi types who go in to try and kill off Dolomite. So there's really, but again, that's the extent of entirely, that is the extent of everything that happens in this thing, interspersed with some just great lines like, let me pass, or they're going to be taking these motherfucking hush puppies out of your ass. Just
yeah,
amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Dolomite is my name, and fucking up other motherfuckers is my game.
Yep,
just amazing stuff.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And we got to talk about the signifying monkey. Because this is part of his nightclub act, and it's a parable about lion hunter on the savannah, and who's trying to go after this monkey. And there's also some part about an oak tree, which I didn't know was indigenous to the savannah, but anyway, and the crowd is in stitches over this story, and I could barely follow along.
Exactly, and then earlier in the film, he's on the streets, and a group of
toughs are gathering around him, like he's some sort of a prophet.
Yeah, exactly.
And he's regaling them with this story about the Titanic.
Yeah,
and it goes nowhere.
And about Shine on the Titanic, yeah. and they're just going crazy. Like, I mean, every line he says are high-fiving each other.
Yeah, it's like Richard Pryor himself emerged from prison.
Oh, my Lord, and I'm trying to follow along with this story, and I really couldn't make heads or tails out of it. So, the Titanic and Shine and, I don't know, and then at one point he's ready to stop the story. Have I given you guys enough?
No.
He's going to continue on. And, yeah, look, this movie, so low budget. One of the things that you can...
clearly... make out, yeah. There's sounding boards and boom mics that I think in three or four scenes it's
not even subtle. It's not even like a glimpse of a boom mic. It's like the boom mic is there, like a flowing turd above the screen.
Yeah, and sometimes under it as well.
Yeah.
There's lots of boom mic misplacement.
Mm. But it's interesting because it does have a reputation. People love Dolomite. I mean, way back when we talked about movies that got us into...
genre cinema. This was a touchstone.
You mentioned this movie in particular. It's one that sort of...
Yeah, a friend of mine tipped me off to this, and we would quote from it liberally, and then it was this was sort of a stepping stone to stuff like the Ron O'Neill... excellent, like this guy looks so badass with his slick back hair.
Superfly.
Yeah, an incredible Curtis Mayfield soundtrack, maybe one of the best soundtracks of all time.
Yep, I got it on vinyl, I love it.
Oh, it's amazing. Black Caesar with James Brown.
Richard Roundtree's Shaft, but
Fred the Hammer Williamson, all this, just this great this subculture of neat stuff. Coffee, right. You name it.
Yeah,
T. Jackson.
Not only that, but I mean, this is blaxploitation. This is the subgenre black exploitation, blaxploitation. Now, Shaft came out in 1971, so this was not a forebearer of blaxploitation. Mm-hmm. This was within the the heyday of blaxploitation.
Yeah, the grindhouse cinema, and well, Shaft I think had some defenders, critical. Mm-hmm. From the perspective of critics, the rest of them really didn't. I think so. The rest of them were sort of low budget, exploitative, cheap things that sort of were not targeted to the mass audiences. It was like a celebration of black independence,
yeah,
if you want.
Well, but at the same time, I mean, they were glorifying, you know, pimp culture, mm-hmm. and
in their own strange morality.
In a lot of ways, perpetuating the negative
stereotypes,
of the African man. Mm-hmm. And but I mean, these films were huge with black audiences who, I guess, they were just happy to be represented
yeah,
on
for
screen.
Sure.
And despite the fact that you know, a lot of these movies, from a modern perspective, look extremely offensive with some of the, you know, the liberal use of the word nigger, you know, the pimps and the hustlers and whatnot, and the drug dealers who are, you know, the heroes of the movie. Blaxploitation holds a huge part within genre cult cinema. Actually, I gotta say, Pam Grier, mm-hmm. The Pam Grier film directed by Jack Hill, that was incredible, because not only do you have a kick-ass female action hero, which was extremely rare back then, but she also happens to be African-American.
For sure.
And Coffee took no guff. Coffee was someone, I mean, she was able to handle herself. And that was empowering, I would say.
Oh, I agree, yeah.
And also the other thing we got out of this genre was we got the horror, the blaxploitation horror, Black
Killer. Oh, Abby, yeah.
Abby, well, Abby was sort of like a weird fringe sort of blaxploitation exorcist, but I mean, what about Blackula, about Blackenstein? These were incredible movies. You know, Blackula,
sure.
Scream, Blackula, Scream.
Yeah, and even forays into martial arts with your Jim Kelly, a great, incredible ass-kicking mm-hmm. martial arts star.
Yep.
Just amazing screen presence.
And there was even, I believe it was William Marshall, the actor that played Blackula? Either way, I mean, he was a Shakespearean-trained actor, and he brought an incredible bit of, you know, class to that role, and
I was even thinking the bailiff on Night Court was in one of these things. Not the bailiff, who was it, one of the security staff, one of the black guys on Night Court.
Well,
was,
no, I mean, look, the only black people on Night Court was Marshall Warfield, who, and there was the
guy was in a, like, black Gestapo, like, his origins were
clerk, I believe. What was that?
Yeah, it was something. He had his origins in this kind of film, too, mm-hmm. But it's funny, as quotable as it is, and as empowering as it is for maybe a black audience at the time, as white kids seeing this, what was also funny was how the white guys were depicted, which was great, because mm-hmm. it gives you a taste of your own medicine of what it must have been like for blacks to be in sort of a subservient role mm-hmm. in the early days of cinema. So here you have these stereotypical just losers who are on there, all depicted in terrible ways, who are just as corny as fuck.
Yeah.
Like the one guy who Dolomite gets out of the joint, gives him his prison gear, and he hands it to him. I don't need this shit no more. And then the guard says, "Oh, you'll be back, Dolomite. You'll be back." In like the most cornball, goofball accent, and they're all corrupt.
Mm-hmm.
They're all just venal and sleazebags and just con artists, like this politician here, this Mayor Daley.
Mm-hmm.
Just great. You gotta love. It's a bit of payback. The big payback.
The big payback.
Yeah.
That's
love how
yeah.
the whites are depicted
yeah.
here. It's just great.
And this and the character of Dolomite endured. I mean, there was a sequel to this called The Human Tornado.
Yeah.
And Rudy Ray Moore also went on to make a film called Disco Godfather.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't play Dolomite, but he basically, I mean, Rudy Ray Moore and Dolomite were interchangeable.
Yeah.
You might as well call the guy Dolomite.
Where does Rudy Ray Moore begin and Dolomite
end? Where
does
Rudy Ray Moore begin and Dolomite end? Also, I mean, we talk about the influence of blaxploitation and this this wave of black cinema in the early to late 70s. We got to talk about Quentin Tarantino.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the man was, you know, hugely influenced by, I mean, he's gone on record to say that Jack Hill, who's directed, who by the way was a white guy, who directed some of the best blaxploitation films, as well as some good, women in prison movies,
mm-hmm.
is one of Tarantino's absolute favorite directors. And of course, when Tarantino made Jackie Brown,
yeah, I mean, who stole the show there? Even opposite De Niro, who stole the show?
Well,
Pam Grier, holy crap.
I don't know what was up with De Niro and Jackie Brown. That was one of those, I mean, the man's sort of been phoning in for the last, I'd say, 20 years, but in that performance...
Oh, come on, The Intern? Are you saying you haven't seen that?
I'm saying I haven't seen it. Have you seen it?
No, hell no.
Yeah.
Hell no.
What was it? You want to suck on my nipple, Father?
God.
I don't know. That's just terrible. But,
yeah.
I mean, I was excited because, you know, Robert De Niro in a Tarantino movie? I mean, Tarantino, if he could pull a good performance out of John Travolta, what is he going to do with Robert De Niro? But I don't know. De Niro seemed to be just...
Well, he was just outshined.
Oh, he was just,
Pam Grier is unbelievable. Amazing now. It would be great to chat with her. Hopefully we can get her on the show.
Robert Forster was incredible in that movie. Mm-hmm. Samuel Jackson, of course, is always great in Tarantino's movies. And yeah, Jackie Brown was... It was an interesting movie in the sense that it paid homage to blaxploitation. When we first meet Pam Grier, we got that wonderful scene where she's going on the conveyor in the airport, and across 110th Street is playing.
Yeah, amazing.
By, I believe it was Bobby Womack.
Yes.
And that was used earlier in a blaxploitation movie. And but the thing about Jackie Brown is that Ordell, the character played by Samuel Jackson, you would almost see him in a 70s blaxploitation movie, but really, Jackie Brown, and of course this is Pam Grier, who once played Foxy Brown, right? Yeah, she was a strong woman who was sophisticated with a more more moral footing than others, and then there's this really touching romance between her and Robert Forster.
It was beautiful.
As a Bill Bondsman, and that feels...
Yeah, and two people of that age, you would not necessarily expect to see getting romantically together, because it's just not something depicted very often on screen, especially in this kind of genre film, especially in this.
But, I mean, this is not the Jackie Brown podcast, this is the Dolomite podcast. So, and you are, you know, you've been a booster of this movie for as long as I've known you, man. So tell me, like, what is the everlasting appeal of Dolomite for you?
Well, the everlasting appeal is just these incredible quotable lines. Like when one of the bitches is trying to give the mayor his comeuppance, and he's taking a dump, and she's got a gun pointed on him, and she says, "I'm sending you straight to hell on this toilet seat." Like, in what other genre would you hear that? And also the liberal use of "no good" and "rat soup." Like, these are just sort of terms that Dolomite would just insert into his crazed monologues. Like, "you no good, insecure, junkyard motherfucker." Like, it makes no sense at all. It's just a tangential sort of a stream of consciousness. It's just good because it sounds good. And in that way, he could be... He's definitely a progenitor of rap, because some things are just there because they sound good. They don't necessarily have to have meaning. It could just be a sort of onomatopoeia. And that's what the best rappers are involved in, just putting sounds together. And there's so many neat lines in here. I love the Reverend, who goes on the spiel about the rats and the roaches. It just reminds me of, like, Ray Charles' version of Stevie Wonder's Living for the City, where Ray Charles does this rap in the middle of it where he talks about the rats and the roaches and and how, like, life is tough and I can't find no job, and it's in the middle of this thing with just a backbeat. It's one of the best cover versions of any song I've ever heard.
I've actually never heard that version. I adore Living for the City.
No, it's amazing. And Ray Charles is just one of my idols. He's just incredible. I can't get over how, and even that duet he did with, well, he could do country. He was a country artist as well, and he did a great duet with Willie Nelson. Yeah. Just incredible.
But yeah, Living for the City. I mean, that's like sort of like a cinematic sort of killing song in amongst itself. And then when you have, just when you mentioned that Ray Charles did a cover version of that, and it's sort of this really impassioned rap, I got goosebumps.
Yeah.
At that moment, I know what I'm going to be doing after we press stop on this.
Oh, for sure, we're going to be checking some of that out.
Checking that out.
Yes.
And so, okay, so the lines and the action.
Oh, the action, yes. The fists come within, like, maybe a half meter of anyone's face. The roundhouse kicks you can spot coming from last week. Just terrible action sequences, but lots of love for cinema. This is Dolomite, obviously. Rudy Ray Moore is sort of an auteur. His vision maybe wasn't as well-crafted as he maybe wanted it to be, but there's something just hilarious about it. You're not entirely sure whether the action sequences were played for comedy purposes, because that's how bad it is. You really can't tell. And even upon revisiting it, I'm not sure what is meant to be funny and what isn't, and that's whether that's the comedy or the action, which that sort of says something right there.
So this film occupies a really, really interesting niche in blaxploitation cinema. I went on IMDb, and one guy called it the Plan 9 of blaxploitation. That's just a bizarre comparison. I mean, it's not that bad, nor is it that good, because, I mean, I love Plan 9. I think Plan 9 from Outer Space is an incredible work of art, but it's entertaining. There's a ton of subplots that go nowhere. you know, Rudy Ray Moore is, he's a character. He's yeah. worth watching just to see, I mean, to see Rudy Ray Moore. And
you just see him wearing a tartan bow tie, which is hilarious toward the end. Mm-hmm. His outfits are amazing.
And it's funny, too, because, I mean,
so much fur in this movie. Yeah, just an incredible culture.
And he's meant to be this tough guy that can roll the punches and clip the streets. And he's like the antithesis of tough.
Yeah. Yeah.
His nemesis, Willie Green, is the complete antithesis of intimidating.
He's
sort of like cherubic kind of fellow, you know, really baby.
It's true. When you compare him to, I guess, ex-football player like Fred the Hammer Williamson,
mm-hmm.
or even like the imposing Isaac Hayes, who starred in a bunch of these
Truck
things
Turner,
too.
Yep.
Yeah, Truck Turner. Like, this guy cannot kick any ass at all. He's just sort of, he's got the gift of gab, and I guess that'll take you far. You can always charm your way to the top.
So, ultimately, what did you learn from Dolomite?
Oh my god. Let's see. I learned
the fact that it's possible to kick your own ass.
Well, I learned that. Oh my God! Yeah, there's no security at this nightclub. What did you say the nightclub was called?
Ah, this was great. This was Dolomite's Total Experience.
Yeah. And it was Dolomite's Total Experience, which showcased the Dolomite dancers
mm-hmm.
and Dolomite's backing band and Dolomite's comedy.
That
so
was,
if
that
you were
a...
not into Dolomite, mm-hmm. this nightclub would not be for you.
Well, it's a total experience,
yeah.
right? Like,
I fail to see how this would be a moneymaker.
Forget the Alan Parsons Project. This is a Dolomite Total Experience. You know?
And this has to be one of the great nightclub brawls of all time. There's just 100 people just throwing fists and kicks. And when they go into the back kitchen, even the chef knows martial arts. And he can like kick butt with aplomb. That was amazing. Now, what did you learn?
Yeah, I mean, I guess what I learned is that the Dolomite Total Experience is an interesting one. The band, Dolomite's backing band, I mean, they have this
amazing
number where they played a glorious song. I believe it's called Time on Our Side.
Mm-hmm.
And just the way that their splendor, the way they look, the coolness when they're, you know, playing that bass and, you know, funky groove, and then, you know, their choreographed moves and dancing. I mean, there's something so cool about these blaxploitation films.
They kind of reminded me of the Temptations, plus with that group from Philly, what are they called, who did Money.
Don't recall the name, but I mean,
that had that sound. And
he sort of looked like Maurice White from Earth, Wind, and Fire.
Yeah.
He had a weird sort of processed hair and everything, and they were really, really good. Actually, a lot of these blaxploitation movies stop for incredible musical numbers. Blackula has a really good one. And if nothing else, say a little about this genre, it's given us some incredible songs.
Incredible songs, incredible fashion, just amazing.
Yeah, and the influence is felt to this day in of course, rap and other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And another really funny movie that I wanted to mention is I'm Gonna Get You, Sucker.
For sure, yeah, the Wayans Brothers
the
thing
Wayans
from
Brothers
1988.
Parody of blaxploitation films.
They died of an overdose of gold chains.
Yeah,
it's a great one.
I think like one of the funniest performances ever by Chris Rock.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
Coming for your ribs.
Yeah.
He's like, $5. $5? I don't have $5. How much for one rib?
Yeah.
And it just goes on and on and on. $2. $2? I just want to sip. It was a hilarious movie.
Oh. And then on our rating scale of 1 to 5 ribs, however many sweet ribs you're going to give this out of 5.
Well, I gotta give this one rib.
Yeah, objectively, just complete, just exposition fests. I would say about 25 minutes of musical performance and stand-up comedy, both of which,
mm-hmm.
well, half of which were completely irrelevant and useless and did not do anything to further the plot. Very poorly made, very low budget,
mm-hmm.
and yet, by our scale, on the other hand...
You know, great fashions, the undeniable presence of Rudy Ray Moore. Even when he's monologuing, I couldn't follow the
trajectory.
The
signifying monkey almost had a cadence like 'twas the night before Christmas, and all through the house.
Yes.
It's weird, and yet it was all about the monkey in the savannah and trying to. And if I had a chance, I would beat you down. And everyone's just applauding and
mm-hmm.
standing and just hooting and hollering.
Yep.
Just wow.
And then the Reverend was the character as well. I mean, we mentioned him a couple times, but I mean, at one point he's delivering. he's sermonizing and he's talking about, you know, we got to take down these white devils and so on and so forth. And the cops come and he's like, oh, Lord.
Changes on a dime. Yeah.
So, I mean, there were, okay, maybe it was a little bit harsh when he was beginning. Yeah. No laughs to be found. There were laughs to be found.
Yeah, lots of unintended laughs.
Yeah, I mean, so I'm going to say that Dolomite is...
Three and a half?
No, I'm going to say 2.5, but you're going to go give it 3.5?
I'm going to give it, between 3 and 3.5. Definitely worth checking out. Again, just for... I believe he died a few years back. Mm-hmm. The incredible, incomparable presence of the rotund Rudy Ray Moore. Got to check it out on that note for sure.
The Frank Costanza of Blaxploitation.
Yes. And check out our website too, www.reallyawfulmovies.com. Twitter, awful_movies. And we'll talk to you soon.
Take care.